I'm Margaret, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
everybody. I want to thank the committee for asking me over here and for the beautiful hospitality that I've received since coming here. I was over here 12 years ago. I was asked to talk, and I just remembered the love and the warmth, and I've seen some of the same faces, and it's just nothing like AA love. It's just everywhere you go. I don't know what this says, but I believe I'm more nervous than I was 12 years ago. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but I usually calm down and let God take over somewhere along the way. So let's hope that happens pretty quickly. But, I know that if my legs shake the whole time I'm up here, it's worth it. I have never been shortchanged in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous yet. Whatever I'm asked to do, I try to do. But this talking sometimes kind of really gets scary when there's a big group like this. But I really do appreciate being here, and I really do appreciate being able to share the miracle of my recovery. Because my recovery is truly a miracle to me. It was be 16 years next month, and that's a miracle to me too, since the last time I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everyone had given up on me. My friends, my family, doctors, lawyers, my minister, everybody thought that I was hopeless, and I had given up on myself. I did not think there was any way in the world that I could live without drinking alcohol, and I didn't want to. But I did find a way to do that here, and I'm so grateful to be able to share it. Everything that I am able to do, say, think, or feel is the direct result of God working through people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that. And I'm real close to that miracle when I share, and that's why I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to do it. I began my story when I was 10 years old. My father died when I was 10, and that was the first time that I remember pain and fear and even anger that he'd left me. And my mother told me to hold up my head and smile. We never shared feelings in my family. And I did that, and I bundled up all of those feelings. I was so afraid, and I was so angry that he'd left me. And I always would smile and hold up my head, and I was fine. I did not find out until I was a year sober that my daddy died in DTs. He was 43 years old. And I thought that he had died of a heart attack. And, of course, that's the way it was back then. Nobody talked about alcoholism. And as I was going down the path of alcoholism, it was never shared with me. I thought that I was the first person in my family that had ever been an alcoholic, and that's sad. So for that reason, I'm grateful to be able to share. I did not drink when I was in high school. Back in the 50s, it just was not the thing to do. It never occurred to me to drink. So I did not take a drink when I was in high school. And when I was a senior in high school, I started dating someone at the university and going to fraternity parties, and everybody there was drinking and carrying on. And I think that if you're not drinking at all, it's hard to gauge who drinks what, because I did not realize that he drank more or differently from other people. I just knew that he was the life of the party. He was the best dancer I ever saw, and I just thought he hung the moon. And when I graduated from high school, I ran away and married him. And I broke my mother's heart because she had planned all of her life for me to go to college. But a pattern set up that was to follow me for many, many, many a day and nearly kill me. I never had to pay the fiddler for my actions. Even though my mother was heartbroken, she set us up in a little apartment, and I began life as a co-ed. During this time, our little apartment by the university was the hangout of the whole KA fraternity. There was drinking and partying and just whooping it up, and we had a wonderful time because, see, it was okay for married women to drink. And I realize now that I was saved from my alcoholism then because I got pregnant right off the bat. Because I love to drink right from the very beginning. But to make a long story short, I went to the university for a year and I had a baby. I went back to the university for another year, I had another baby. I went back to the university for another year and I had another baby. And my husband had graduated, but the party did not end. I know what the Al-Anon has gone through when they reached these doors. I have slept in the car with three little babies. I have hidden out in the yard with three little babies. I've poured alcohol down the drains. I've had the electricity cut off. I know the horrors of alcoholism. And when I was 21 years old, I left that man and divorced him on the grounds of habitual drunkenness. And I never looked back until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and was forced to take a fourth step. And I say forced because I have never done anything in this program till I hurt so bad I didn't have another choice. But I went back home to live with my mother and go to the university and finish my last year of school. And I was able to do that. During this time, everything was being published about alcoholism. That's when things were first starting to come out about it a lot. And I read everything I could get my hands on about alcoholism, but I never read to learn. I read in total disgust. How could anybody be that weak? Disease my foot. How could anybody not have any more willpower than that? That gives me a pain. It's just propaganda, that disease business. And that's what I really felt. And after I graduated from the university, I started teaching school, and I started drinking, and I started partying, and I started dating, and I was living at my mother's house. And I promised that today, when I look back, I have to be really honest and know that I was not a mother to my three children at all. I was like a teenager living at my mother's house. I did not bathe my children. I did not feed my children. I didn't read to my children. I didn't do anything. I just wanted to go out and play. And my mother would say, "Margaret, you don't need to party all the time. You need to be here with these children." And I thought she was the meanest person I'd ever seen in my life. I had missed all the fun. I got married at 17, and I deserved to have a good time. And folks, I really felt that. I just never could look at anything but my own selfishness. And once that alcohol took over, man, I was off and running. I loved to drink right from the very start. I realize now, the longer I'm sober, that I was probably alcoholic right from the very, very start because I drank differently from other people. Way back from the beginning, I loved to fix a drink to get dressed with, a drink to take in the car. You know, when they cut you off at different times, I'd have two or three drinks, you know, ready for that. And other women would be talking about going on house parties, you know, taking cake and potato salad. I was taking beer and PJ and, you know, who cared about all of that? I used to say when I came in here that I just liked to be with the men. I drank like a man, and I didn't like to be with the women. Thank God for sponsors. But I used to say, those women are so boring. All they want to do is cook and be with babies, and I just couldn't stand any of that way back there. But I started dating a man who was a very heavy social drinker, and I thought I could change him. It was not long before I was encouraging him and I was planning the drinking times, and I dated him for several years, and when he asked me to marry him, I thought all my dreams had come true. But all of my dreams were material dreams. He was able to give me all of the things that I thought would make me happy. I was able to quit teaching school. We moved in a neighborhood that I thought if I lived in that neighborhood, I'd be okay. We joined clubs that I thought if I belonged to that club, I'd be okay. I was able to do all of the things that I'd always thought would make me happy. And it seems like the more material goals that I set for myself, the emptier I got as I acquired more and more. He adopted my three children, and we had two of our own. And my life got so shallow and so empty that the top priorities in my life were where I was going, what I was going to wear, and who was going to babysit. That's what was important to me. And I started suffering from severe, severe hangovers. And I never looked at me and how much I was drinking. I looked at how much my husband had drank and said it isn't fair. He drank more than I did. And he's able to go to work. And here I sit feeling like this. I started doing things that other women were doing and finding fulfillment in. And nothing worked. I'd get so anxious at all these coffees and different things like that that I'd just feel like I was going to jump out of my skin. I took bridge lessons. I took tennis lessons numerous times. I joined book clubs. I joined garden clubs. Nothing worked for me but a drink. Nothing else worked. Now, the most important thing to me during this time was that nobody knew. I had divorced a drunk. I'd read all that stuff about alcoholism. And I want to tell you, folks, I could rationalize anything. Anything. And I still can today, which is why I need Alcoholics Anonymous as much today and maybe more than I did when I came to you when I was dying, because I can rationalize anything. A bottle of vodka in a shoebox was normal, and I could rationalize that. As long as nobody found it, that's all that mattered to me. I was the person that got so bitter as I was more and more unfulfilled that I hated everybody and everything. I used to see women swinging tennis rackets with their little tennis dresses on. I'd say, don't they think they're cute? And I hated them. I hated the world. And I was so bitter, it was only alcohol that would calm that down. I was the person at a cocktail party that nursed a drink, talked about everybody there that drank too much, and went home and drank all night by myself, and got up the next morning shaking and crying. Now, I started going to psychologists, I started going to different doctors, ministers, you name it. But I never was honest about my drinking. And I know today that I was not capable of being honest because it was the only solution that I knew to quiet that knot that was inside my chest. It was all that I knew. It stopped being a fun party thing somewhere along the way in there. But one doctor came up with a wonderful solution, and that was to have female surgery. And for all that anxiety and depression, you know. And I'd gotten so that the anxiety was such that I'd get in the grocery store and I'd be determined that I was going to do what I had to do, and I'd just clutch because I knew I couldn't sign my name to a check with that lady looking and leaving groceries in there and things like this that people were starting to really talk about and really notice. And I'd clutch driving the car and that kind of thing. So this doctor says that this female surgery would be the solution. I said, some of us will go to any length. So I went in and I had that surgery. And immediately following that surgery, they thought that I had gone into a premature change of life. I'd like to hope that I've gone through that period, but I've come to in so many detox centers and places that I don't even share from this podium. With those same symptoms, I was shaking all over. I was sweating. My insides were absolutely screaming, and I was in withdrawal from alcohol. I know that today. But they gave me tranquilizers and sleeping pills and hormones, and I went home to recover from that surgery. But I was no longer able to hide my drinking as I'd been able to do. I'd been able to plan it so that nobody knew. I would drink in the daytime and sober up when the kids came home from school and be sober in the evening to some extent and drink all night. Well, I lost the ability to do all of that once I started taking the pills along with the booze. And in 1975, I had to go. My husband took me over to my psychologist's office, and I had to tell him that I was not able to quit drinking. And he was not real surprised, but my husband was absolutely, totally shocked. He could not believe that somebody couldn't just take a drink or not take a drink. And he really looked at me like I was an animal. But when I came to you later, I want to tell you something. I was full of so much rage for that man because he literally left me to die along the way. And thank God for people in Alcoholics Anonymous that made me pray for him. It took me a couple of years, but I was able to get over that rage. And if anyone's experiencing that, I have to tell you, the prayer works. Maybe it doesn't work the first time. Maybe it doesn't work the second time. With me, it was a couple of years. But today, I love that man, and that's a gift. I don't especially like him. Anyway, this is what started my downhill deal. I was put into a place. We didn't have any treatment centers back then. So I just talk about the different places, and it got to be a real challenge to find another place to put me. But I went to somewhere in Columbia that was just opening up, and I stayed there for a few days, and I was kicked out of that place because I didn't comply. And then divorce papers were served on me, and shortly after that I was put in another place in South Carolina. And that was where I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And every Thursday, somebody from the outside would come in from AA and put on a meeting for us. And I can remember I went to those meetings because I thought I'd get out quicker if I went. But I was sitting in the back of the room in my blue jeans, hating those people that came driving up. And I can remember this big man saying his whole life had changed since he'd found Alcoholics Anonymous. His life was beautiful. And he was smoking a cigar. And he put out the cigar and he stepped on it. And I'm sitting in the back of the room thinking, you SOB, I have to mop that floor. And that's what I thought of the beautiful people that took their time to come. It never, ever once crossed my mind when I was put in all these different places that anybody was trying to help me. That never occurred to me. I thought everybody was trying to nail me, and I hated them. I hated them. I hated everything in life except my cigarettes and my booze, and that's where I was. And people would say, Margaret, you got those children, five beautiful children. But folks, I'm telling you, they seemed like a liability to me at the time rather than an asset. I could not get out of myself for 1 minute. Not for 1 minute. And in 1976, my mother died. And I was absolutely devastated. My mother had taken me to my first AA meeting. And along the way, after I got out of that place, I'd gone to different AA meetings that my mother had taken me to and sat outside and waited and encouraged me. And when she died, I felt like there was nowhere for me to fall back. I was terrified. All of those feelings that had been inside of me since my daddy died just erupted. And I was just absolutely overwhelmed, and people in AA came to visit me and begged me to come back, but I didn't. I turned to the only solution that I knew, and that was to drink. And Christmas of 1976, with five children, Santa Claus did not come to our house, and I don't ever want to forget that day. Their daddy came and got them that night, and I was drunk in the bed. I do not remember that day. And after Christmas that year, I kind of pulled myself up by the bootstraps, and people started getting me dates. What I needed was to get out. Well, I got out all right. I started dating somebody that worked at night, and he would come over to the house when he got off about 11:30. And we'd sit there and we'd talk about life and love and all these wonderful things that neither one of us knew a thing about. And we'd have a few drinks, and just everything seemed like it was going to really be wonderful. Well, you see, I thought that I'd found somebody that understood my problem. I didn't know he had the same problem. Once again, I was looking to somebody else to fix me. But this went on for a while, and then I got up and I took the morning drink, and that's the way it was for me. Once I took that morning drink, then I'd be gone for anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, and I'd pull the curtains, and later I wouldn't remember where I got the booze or what I did. It would just all be a blur, and that's what happened. And this man had never seen anybody that just totally ceased to function. He'd never seen that. It blew his mind, and he left. And he got his phone unlisted. I couldn't get through to him at work. He even moved from his apartment. And I use this as an excuse that nobody cares. Everybody has left me. What's the use? And I drank around the clock for the next few weeks. I'm one of the few people I know that's grateful for blackouts. People have told me some of the things that happened during those few weeks, and I'm glad I don't remember them. One of the things, I guess the most beautiful gift that I've ever been given is to be able to laugh at the things that I used to cry about. I used to think I'd die if anybody knew, and now I just share it openly. They took me, the ambulance, my daughter Elizabeth was 16, and she found me unconscious with blood coming out of my nose and my ears, and she thought that I was dead, and she called the ambulance, and I was a regular. The ambulance drivers knew me, the rescue squad, the police, all these people. We lived in a nice neighborhood, too. The taxis coming and everything, you know. But the ambulance took me down to the emergency room in Columbia, and they tell me that they were just talking, you know, it's just that Jones lady passed out again. And they opened the back of the ambulance, and they say that I shot out and ran down the main drag bare ass. It got so bad that my minister tried to prepare me for what was to happen, and that's another gift today. My home group meets in our church, and I'm grateful for that because my minister says that he believes I did more to test his faith than anybody since he's been at the ministry. But he wrapped me up in a blanket and he took me in the living room where officers of the court stood with papers, telling me that I was an unfit mother and taking custody of my children from me. And I can remember they made me look at the signature of the judge, and I can remember that. And I yelled and screamed. I had known him all my life. I played bridge with his wife. I said, he can't do that to me. But he did, and thank God. Thank God he did. I have been able to make amends, and since that time I've been able to take a good many other women in front of him, and he says today, if Margaret can do it, I got faith that you can do it. So I'm grateful that my experiences, you know, have not totally been in vain. Thank God for the promises in this program. But anyway, my children were taken from me. A relative came up from Florida and took me to a motel. And the next day, they brought me back over there after the children went to school and gave me 2 hours to get my belongings and told me from that day on I couldn't set foot on that property or contact the children without permission. Folks, I weighed probably 80 or 90 pounds. I was so skinny that I'd have to get under the shower because my backbone would stick to my shirt. I was shaking all over. My head was shaved on one side where I'd fallen down. And I was just bruised up and black eyes and all of that type thing. And they were trying to tell me what to take. They were real excited that they'd found another place. to put me. And this place was in North Carolina, and they said, you know, that I needed some comfortable shoes that, you know, we might do some walking up there. And I was crawling around in the closet, and I was just sweating all over, that awful feeling. I can remember it like it was yesterday. And they said, you know, Margaret, you might get your boots. You might do some hiking up there. So I pulled out one of my boots, and there in that boot was a bottle of vodka. I said, thank you, Jesus. And that got me up to this place in North Carolina. I guarantee you there's somebody in this room that's been there. It's called Hebron Colony. I went to Grace Home, which is the women's place. Now, Grace Home sits on the top of a mountain. And along the way, I had developed such tremendous phobias, and the worst one was a fear of heights. And Grace Home sits on the top of a mountain. And it's cold turkey up there. You don't have any detoxing or any of that type thing. It's just cold turkey. And twice a day you have to go to church, and it's mandatory. And the church is at the bottom of the mountain. So I said over the years it was really something to get me to the church on time. I'd be yelling and screaming and carrying on. And they'd put all 12 women in a Volkswagen bus and just zoop us down that mountain. And I was just terrified. And finally, the director up there, who was a minister, took me aside. And he said, Margaret, do you think God got you up here to run you off the side of a mountain? And I heard him. It was the first thing that I had heard in so long. And I realized there had to be a reason that I was alive. I shouldn't have been. And I started listening. And I started sharing with the women up there. And I started getting well. I stayed up there for a couple of months. And when it was time to leave, they advocate going to church rather than AA. And I know that a lot of people find their answers in the church. But I'm a great, great believer in growing where you're planted. And I knew then, as well as I know tonight, that I needed Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I came back home, I did not go to AA. And of course, we kind of know what happens to us when we do that. And I went to church. I started dating the man that I had been seeing before. I got custody back of my children, contingent on my sobriety. I moved back in my house. All of those things, and everybody in this room, this alcoholic, knows exactly what I did. I celebrated. And, gosh, it was awful, but nobody found out that time. I went off and was able to hole up somewhere and was not caught. And so this man that I was dating, you know, he said, well, Margaret, it's pretty normal that you tried it. Just hold up your head and keep on walking. And, I'm so grateful today I never have to walk alone again. When I was doing that, I think that was the most depressed I have ever been in my whole entire life. I felt like a piece of dirt. I didn't even want to go out to the mailbox. I didn't want to go and see my neighbors, anybody. I just was putting one foot in front of the other and not drinking during that time. And the man that I was dating was drinking very heavily, and he was very depressed also. And we came up with a wonderful solution for all of this depression, and that was to get married. Now, believe me, if there's anything more pathetic than one alcoholic that's practicing in a household, it has got to be two. I'm just can't even describe how horrendous it got. We separated, and it might have been like Tobacco Road, if that's any indication, because I had children hiding in the closets. It was absolutely awful. And I was drinking so badly again that my children were afraid that their daddy was going to find out. And my four little girls took me off down to the beach to hide me. And, you know, when I'd gone to AA, I'd hear some of them talk about DTs and things like that, and I used to turn up my nose and think, there's a winos had DTs and that kind of thing. And I want to tell you, I got full-blown DTs down at the beach with my little girls nursing me through hallucinations and convulsions, hiding the keys so that I wouldn't leave, taking turns staying up with me. And it came to me that I needed to get back to AA. That thought came to me out of the clear blue, and I know today that that was God, that I didn't think of that on my own. And I called my husband, and I asked him to come get us, and I wanted to go to AA, and he was going through this divorce proceeding or annulment, and he said he'd put that on hold, and he took me to an AA meeting. I went back in Columbia, and at the end of the meeting, I picked up a white chip, and I turned around, and my husband was picking up a white chip. And you'd think that I'd be so grateful, but I had not even noticed his problem. I was so self-absorbed, and I thought, well, bless his heart, he's doing it for me. And of course he wasn't. He took to this program like a starved man. God, he loved Alcoholics Anonymous right from the very beginning. He was going to meetings all the time. He was talking AA, AA. He was reading everything he could get his hands on. And I thought, well, I've married a fanatic. And so I stopped going. And also something I have started sharing in the last few years that I didn't used to share. When I taught school, I specialized in remedial reading. And when I came to you, I could not read. And I was very embarrassed about that for years. But I know today that I love to share that. If anyone is new and they're having a problem with comprehension, we were talking at supper tonight about having to read if you were a newcomer. And I know that I would have freaked out if anyone had asked me to read out loud. But the thing about it, when I read like the 24-hour book, any little thing, I still couldn't remember it for 5 or 10 minutes. It just would leave me. That does clear up. But that was happening too. People would say, well, read this and read that. And see, nothing was sticking with me. So I'm also real fanatical today about honesty in Alcoholics Anonymous. We can't afford to exaggerate because I'm one of the people that hung on every single word. Every word I took literally that people shared. But anyway, I stopped going, and I was to drink again. And even with everything that I've told you, believe me, it does get worse. And it did get worse, and it was awful. It was absolutely awful. The last time was just unbelievable. But people in Alcoholics Anonymous came to me, and they knew better than I that I was going to lose my children if I didn't watch my step. And they 12-stepped me. They came in twos with orange juice and honey. And they stood my wrath. I have thrown shoes at people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have called them names that you would think were not even in my vocabulary. And I've told them exactly where they could put that big book. And still, they kept coming. And I saw unconditional love in action. And I ain't never been the same since that experience. I wanted what those people had so badly that for the first time in my life, I prayed an unselfish prayer. And I prayed that if I was going to go on hurting people, that God would take me. I did not want to hurt anybody anymore. And from that moment until this moment, I have never had that knot to the extent that it was that day that I surrendered. Because I knew that if I got back to AA, it was going to be okay. And if I died, it was okay. It was okay. And I got back to you, and I was willing to do whatever was necessary to do. I got a sponsor. I'm glad that they did not tell me anything about this 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to a meeting every day for 10 years. Nobody told me I couldn't. I was laughing tonight. They never told me, you know, you could say no. And I'm glad because that's what it took for me. And I don't say that boastfully. It's just what it took for me. I was able to stay married to that man for 6 years, and we worked this program together, and we were able to separate together. And that's been a miracle, to separate without having to sling mud at one another and still be friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that was possible because I've always had to be right. And, you know, I thought it was really necessary to always wear the white hat, and it wasn't. But this program has taught me how to live one day at a time, because when I came here, I did not know how to be a mother at all. I didn't know how to be a friend. I didn't even know how to be a member of AA. As soon as I started getting sober, I wanted to change everything in the group. And I've always hung around from the very beginning with people who were trying to work the steps. Because when I came in here and people were talking about the program, I didn't know what they were talking about. I just didn't know, I couldn't grasp everything that was going on, and I couldn't read. So I was just hanging around with people, with old-timers, and people who were working the steps all the time. And today I know that all of my answers are in the big book, and as close as I stay to the steps, it's a direct result of my serenity level. It was 3 years before I was able to do a fearless and searching moral inventory, and I don't say that to say do as I do, for goodness sakes. It just took me that long. But it was definitely a turning point in my life, because I had been to over 1,000 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had never seen the sixth step till after I did the fifth. Somehow or another, I had missed that until after I did the fifth step, and today a lot of my program takes place in the sixth and seventh step. And I know today that I work on the tenth step on a daily basis and spot check during the day, because I don't want that garbage to build up again. I know that when I'm harboring any type of resentment and that type thing, that it cuts me off from being able to practice the 11th step. And if I don't have that conscious contact, it's the difference to me between living and existing. And I've been out there existing for a long, long time before I came to you. And I've had some days of existing in sobriety, don't get me wrong. But I know that as long as I stay close to people in this program, that they're going to hold my hand and lead me back to where I need to be. Just as long as I stay close and keep praying and go to meetings and do all of the things that I'm supposed to do, I'll get back where I need to be, because I know where those tools are today. I've been very, very fortunate to go on a lot of 12-step calls, and I don't believe I've ever met a man or a woman that had a worse problem with alcohol than I had, and I'm grateful for that today. Because I don't have to point a finger at anybody. You've shown me how to point away. And I'm truly grateful for that. I've got a little sign that hangs up in my kitchen that says, I cannot change what is past. I can only learn from it. Everything I've done in my life was necessary for me to be who I am today. And today I'm a reasonably happy woman most of the time. And I'm truly grateful when the closer I stay to you. And I have to stay mighty close to folks, because I just don't go off and be grateful by myself. It takes other people to help me practice gratitude still today. And I've got so much to be grateful for. When I came to you, I couldn't read, and today I'm able to work full time. I've got 5 children that I'm close to today. And they have given me 6 grandchildren. With each grandchild, I've been allowed to keep them for the first week of their lives. And that's been a mighty, mighty special blessing that you have given me. It's a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been able to share the first week of their life. I had a lot of experiences in AA. A lot of them were painful. A lot of them got me where I needed to be, because I had said I never wanted to hurt people again, and I didn't know how to have a relationship whatsoever. And I found that I was getting hurt, and I'd hurt other people, and I didn't know how not to do that once I was divorced and single, and my children were growing up, and my sponsor told me, said, Margaret, you got to learn to walk by yourself before you can walk with anybody else. So I'm so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous once again showed me how to walk single, because I did not know how to do that. And once I got real comfortable walking single, my higher power has a beautiful sense of humor, because he then put someone else in my life that I had to learn to walk with again. And a month ago, I got married again. And so that's just, it's been a beautiful journey in sobriety. It has been a beautiful journey. Every day is exciting to me. I know that I used to be so afraid when I'd wake up in the morning and I'd think, God, what am I going to do with this whole day? And now most of the time I get up excited to see what's going to come down, and that's the difference that the program has given me. Because the world had said, you made your bed, now you lie in it. But a power greater than myself said, take up your bed and walk. And I want to thank every one of you for walking with me. Appreciate you.